I'm going to take tea and take a sip of it and spit it into each and every one of your mouths. Oh, it'll burn me, but it'll burn you twice. Burn me once with tea, shame on me. Burn you twice in your own mouth, shame on everybody involved.
TBTM. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
You're singing that wrong.
How? I made it up.
They had been posting their stuff out on the internet, and apparently they'd been met with virtually nothing but ridicule.
Hey, Lloyd, do some delivery for the truck to the airport.
It's not great. It's fantastic. You totally undersold it. The pageantry, the costumes, wow.
I put my headphones on, and here we go. I'm so excited.
All right, here we go, everybody. Hi, welcome, good morning. It is time for a Friday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's a kind of magic.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Yeah!
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It's a cloudy day here, staring out over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. It's a kind of cool gray day, but it is not without its excitement and, let's be honest, adrenalized terror here within the confines of Burbank Springs.
There is something about the soul of a cat.
About 5 minutes before showtime, I was wrapping things up in the living room. That's usually where I prepare for this. Award-winning, or maybe someday award-nominated podcast. And I had just closed up my laptop. I was ready to walk in here to the studio, start the show, and I hear a sound, a kind of high-pitched chirp that I have unfortunately now learned and I can identify by ear as the distressed cry of a small bunny.
I knew I should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque.
And I realized that the Bay Kitty had cornered a small rabbit and had it somewhere cornered in the house. I'm coming to you from Catland. Welcome to Catman's world. Anyway, I went everywhere, could not find the cat or the bunny, and then finally found them under the bed in our bedroom. Got the cat out of there. Got the dog. The poor dog is always the one who gets...
I'll say, what's up, dog?
The pod dog gets screwed in these situations because she didn't do anything. She wouldn't hurt that rabbit, but I don't need her in my space when I'm trying to deal with this. So get her outside, get Olive outside. I look out the window. This other cat, Uller, who's kind of like the bully cat of the neighborhood, has a scar under his eye, has literally menaced me and Rudy on jogs. Like, we're both like, you know what? That cat would win in a fight. Between me and Rudy versus Uller. Uller's coming in the yard. I'm like, what the hell is happening? I chase Uller out of there. I get a box. I get under the bed. I try to commune with the rabbit. I try to mind meld. And I somehow coax with the power of my mind and a little bit the power of a broom. I coax the bunny into this cardboard box. Take the bunny outside. It's totally fine. Happy to say. It's just scared shitless. Take it to a woodsy area. I release it far away from all of these various animals. And, well, that was the last 10 minutes of my life. So sorry if I'm a little adrenalized. Hey, speaking of animal rescue.
Let the fun begin.
It's one of our top stories here on episode 2968 in a collector's series. I'm not 100% sure the rapper Serengeti isn't out there rescuing coyote puppies.
It was cute. You think you're tough. You're trying to show me you're tough. I believe you. I believe you're so tough.
I have a new favorite amateur botanist / animal rescuer on YouTube. We'll play you the tape coming up also. Somebody on Reddit thinks that my dad is the program director of Cairo.
Who is my daddy and what does he do?
The weirdest. My friend Katie sent me this thing last night late. And she said, the internet is weird. And it was a was a thread on Reddit, somebody speculating about my dad working at Cairo. So we'll get into that too. Plus, it's Friday, so we got music for your weekend. And we have this guy, longest running Cobra of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, their splendor. He's doing the work. He's baby stepping. He's back at it again with the white Vans. He's the Miami meat tent. He just woke up from an extremely stressful dream.
This shiny guy always worries.
He is Andrew Walsh, and he joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. How did I do on our bet?
Well, I guess I win. Question is, what do I win? Before the show,
I told a rabbit that I just caught.
Right before the show.
I knew I should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque.
I told Luke, I have something I want to tell you before the show because I don't want to talk about it on the show because I talk about dreams too much on the show, but I just wanted to share a dream with him. I am not sharing it here. I will not share it here. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to bore the listeners with it, but it was a very kind of work-related stress dream that was very detailed, and I just wanted to get it off my chest before we started the show so that there would be no temptation for me to share it more widely. And then Luke said, yeah, there's still probably a 50-50 chance it'll come up on the show. And I said, well, let's challenge ourselves not to bring it up. And as soon as I said that, I knew that it would be brought up by you probably pretty early in the going.
Yeah, well, you know what we do on this show.
We talk about you and your life, your hopes, your ambitions, your dreams.
This is TalkNet with Luke Burbank. Let's cut up some jackpots. It's funny, though, actually, that you had a stress dream about being part of a radio production that was kind of felt like it was going a little bit off the rails, because I feel like I kind of lived a version of that last night.
Yeah, what was that about? You had told me, can I just give a really quick setup? Because yesterday, you know, you were doing your KUOW live, and I'll let you talk about it in a second. But one detail that you talked about yesterday was that promos were running that said you were kind of featured you in the promos. Bill Radke saying, hey, join us for our weekly roundtable. We're doing a set of live ones. We're going to be up in Bellingham tonight, and we're featuring Bellingham's own Luke Burbank. And I did hear that promo, and I know what you're talking about now. It really did sort of seem like there, because it's a panel, right? It's Radke, you, at least two other people.
Yeah, it was me, Johnny Balter, this guy Antonio.
A lot of pressure on you, though. I noticed that later.
Well,
you were not lying.
It was funny. It was funny because I knew those promos were working because I went into the bank the other day, and I was just having one of those days where I just wasn't feeling. I have so much more detail than we need, but let's just say I went into the bank. I was feeling a little scruffy, a little bit just like not like I was looking so great that day, and I am depositing some money, and the teller says, oh, are you Luke Burbank from KUOW who will be at Week in Review? You're the special guest. She literally like recited the promo to me.
Yeah, the promos
and of course
work.
It was mortifying. I mean, it was very sweet of her, but it was just like, it was of all the days that I didn't really feel like, I don't know. I just wasn't putting my best face forward, as it were. But anyway, I knew that that was what was going on. And so I felt, and because Bellingham is my hometown, I just felt a certain amount of like, I really want to try to do a good job on this episode of the show. And I want to represent Bellingham well. And also, if nobody showed up, I would have felt like that was being a real, that was a real referendum on the Luke Burbank, the Luke Burbank appeal. It turned out a lot of people came. I think there was like had like 900 people coming.
Jeez, so like, Louise. Is that what we're expecting for our Florida show?
Easily. Mm-hmm. Honestly, though, don't do it, Walsh. Don't get me. We're getting more people wanting to come to the Florida show than I'm 100% comfortable with based on where we're going to do the show. Details
will be fine.
To be disclosed very soon on that. But anyway, so it was wonderful. It was a wonderful night overall. There was a lot of tens there. There were a lot of public radio fans. I got to talk to a lot of people after the show. It was a really great night overall. But I will tell you this: because it was free, you did get some hop-ons. You did get some riffraff in the crowd, and I don't mean riffraff like people who are experiencing homelessness or whatever you might think of, or people that rode the rails to get up here.
Talk about Cairo, like, listeners.
I'm talking about people who don't really understand that yelling random shit out throughout the night at us about topics we're discussing, people don't understand that that's not really helping. People who maybe thought they were coming to a Pacifica broadcast or some sort of Amy Goodman-related, you know, very, let's just say, progressive type of event. Basically, what happened was there is a small group of people, by the way. The vast majority of the crowd was amazing. But a small group of people decided that it was a call-and-response night. So, you know, we're talking about the news, and we're talking about topics in the news and things about Amazon and privacy. And Bill would raise an issue. Joni or Antonio or I would start talking about it. And then somebody in the crowd would just scream, "What about China?" And I was like, "Huh?" Or somebody was like, "Yeah, Rupert Murdoch." People were just yelling random shit that had to do with some like conspiracy blog they had read somewhere. And again, I'm not saying that the point of view that people were trying to yell to us occasionally was one that was without merit, but this was just really the wrong time. There was no way for us to actually have a meaningful conversation with some person yelling from the audience. And the problem is when there's about 900 people in the room, and let's just say there was like 15 of them who were just like, just honestly thought that it was their job to yell at us if they disagreed with something we were saying.
Or add input. The problem is, was it always disagreement or was it sometimes like somebody just felt like they had more to say? Because I saw you go through something like this at a LiveWire like years ago. Not probably to this degree, but I remember there were some people in an audience at a Seattle LiveWire where once they became vocal, I think other people were like, "Oh, it's that kind of a party." And then other people kind of became vocal. Do you have any recollection of that at all?
Vaguely, but what I would say about this was it was sort of more challenging because the topics were so news-based.
Yeah.
And everyone has an opinion. And the problem was anything we said was going to be out of step with one of these 15 troublemakers. So it was kind of like there was no answer that we could give. Not that we wanted to cater our answers to the hecklers, but there was sort of like anything we would say would sit wrong with one of the people that had decided to vocalize their thoughts. So it was just kind of this thing. There was a point at which I sort of felt like – and then I was in my own head because like Bill is the host of the show and Bill is an amazing host. He did a really great job. But I also host things like this sometimes. And so it's kind of like my host brain is also just spinning really fast. I don't mean like it's spinning in an effective and good way. I just mean it's spinning. Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of also going into like crisis management mode, but I'm trying to not – I don't want to overstep. I'm not the host of the show. And it wasn't even like Bill needed my help. It was just I just have this kind of anxiety reaction in those situations based on how I'm wired. And so this – some woman was just – wouldn't stop yelling things. And finally I just turned to her. I don't know where she was in the darkness and I just said, "Mom, we talked about this." Mm-hmm. And the crowd, you know, laughed pretty hard. And then, of course, and it seemed to tamp that situation. I don't know if the woman left or just was staging a silent protest or self-immolated. I don't know what happened to her. But then in my head, I'm like, oh, wow, well, okay, so here's what just happened. I have basically now drawn a line that it's me versus the people in this room and that if you say something, I will cut you. Mm. Also, I'm based on the woman's voice, assuming she's older than me, I've now painted her as my mom. I don't know what her age is, but I've just classified her based on my assumption about her age. You know what I mean? It's like I'm so inside my head at this point. It kind of worked. I feel like the yelling sort of died down after that. And then we proceeded to have a really fun night. And again, everybody on the panel was great. The crowd was amazing. And it was really fun to talk to everybody after the show. So that's the debrief, the post-mort on last night, which will be on the radio here in like 2 hours in the greater Seattle and Bellingham area.
Oh, that's right. They got to turn that thing over quickly. I mean, you talk about being timely.
Night.
This is even more timely, huh? I mean, especially the news changes so fast. Boy, what am I saying? I now sound like just an old man talking at a Denny's. Well, the news just moves so fast these days. You notice that?
It really does. You can't believe anything out there. It's all fake news.
And you know what else? Just like, I don't even know if I can trust the weatherman anymore. It's just like, you know what I mean? Like, I might as well be up there. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. I also, the other thing that happened that was like kind of became a little bit challenging was, and this I sort of had a sense this was going to happen. We're talking about Bellingham, and because we're doing the show from Bellingham, but there was this thing. This used to also happen when I lived in Port Townsend. people that live in Bellingham, some of the people that were in the room, they I think they're legitimately worried that if we say nice things about Bellingham on the radio, people will move to Bellingham in large numbers and therefore drive up the property taxes or increase the traffic or something. It's like a very like I'm the last one in, let's shut the door kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Poor Townsend, and you said a little bit was like that when you lived there too, right?
That was more one-to-one. What would happen is people would – and usually very good in a good-natured way, but I'd bump into someone and they would have heard me talking about it on Livewire on the radio and they would be like, you know, you're going to bring a lot of people to this town. But it would be just like a brief and, again, generally friendly conversation. This was weird because this was – I can't tell how many people it was, but this was like more than 50 people who started saying shh every time – anything that was even tangentially positive about Bellingham was spoken of from the stage, they would start going, shh. And then I think what it was like five people were serious about it. And then 150 people were like, oh, this is just we're being funny. We're interacting.
Sure.
And by the way, in their defense, they had been given multiple pep talks before the show to be loud, to hoot, holler, clap, all of that stuff. So a lot of people, I think, were probably just like, hey, this is interactive. Mm-hmm. And they were really just trying to be part of the process. But what was made it difficult was like, we're just trying to talk. And then the whole room is erupting and shh. There was this one point where a question from the audience was, have you ever seen a UFO or like a Sasquatch? And I start talking about something about Sasquatch and I can't remember what I said, but then everyone starts shushing me and I'm like, are you worried people are going to move here because they think we have Sasquatch?
Wait. I don't think this
– was this a dream I had?
No, I think this – this is just people didn't want you to talk anymore, and your brain categorized that as defensiveness. It was like weird. At one point, I like started talking about my dreams. Had nothing to do with Bellingham, and everybody started going, shh. Like, I don't know. Like, why is that going to bring people to Bellingham?
It was so weird because then the producers got in on it, and they took my mic away. Then they closed the theater, and then the theater staff was in on it. They locked me out. I was like, guys, I get it. I'm in a manic episode.
We don't want to attract more people to Bellingham. Is it really 4 a.m.? Where does the time go? Did I talk you out of your hot take on the Bay City's motto?
You talked me into a hotter take.
Oh,
I talked myself into a much better take. It's a basic take. It's right down the middle. It's not high comedy. I'm not proud of myself, but I did bring up the subdued. I'll just tell you, and there's like 20 people listening right now who are at the show. They probably have their own opinions on how effective this little joking was. And this was before we started recording. This was just like a little warm up. I said, you know, it's weird to me that this slogan got established, City of Subdued Expectation – or Excitement, rather. It's weird that it got established because a guy just painted it on a wall. I was like – he just painted it on a wall and then said, that's our slogan. And Bellingham was like, yeah, that'll work. I was like, if other cities did that, think about how disastrous that – New York's policy – New York's slogan would be, fuck the police.
Mm.
It was a graffiti joke. And that was about the reaction I got from the crowd.
Well, I see those, but you didn't. So you did. You just turned it into like a little stand-up joke. You didn't actually like try to make a statement.
Well, hold on, let me finish.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
can I finish? Can I finish? I try to keep those Ross Perot impressions just right at the tip of my brain. So then I said, I said my problem. This was an outgrowth of our conversation yesterday, Andrew. I said, I think my problem is with the word subdued because subdued makes me think of this town being kind of bummed out or depressed, and I don't think it's a bummed out place because you can't be bummed when the ratio of breweries to residents is 1-to-1.
Mm-hmm.
And I said Bellingham's town slogan should be Bellingham, City of Unlimited Breweries. Bellingham, when you can't find a babysitter but you still want to be pretty drunk in public.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's basically brewery culture here is just young, clean scrubbed, attractive, polar fleece clad couples drinking IPAs with their kids running around. It's like where you can go and drink and have your kids with you.
Yeah.
So that was kind of ultimately what I said. And I think it was a I would give it a 7. What really slayed all day, Andrew, which – where was I the other day? I saw somebody wearing a T-shirt that said Slay All Day, and I was like, I promise you, you're not slaying all day.
Oh my God.
Unless your name is Olive, the Bay Kid, you are not. You are not. Yeah, get a onesie for Olive, and then maybe a onesie made out of lead so she can't actually move as fast and can't slay all day. Anyway.
Let me jump in 1 second and just say I finally started that Taffy Brodesser Ackner book, her debut novel, and it's just it's a novel.
Fleischman's in Trouble.
Yeah, Fleischman is in Trouble. And it is really funny, and often you can hear her voice that we know from her pieces kind of coming through. But anyway, one thing that she kind of keeps returning to is that, like, she'll keep on writing about, like, the types of things that are on these, like, yoga t-shirts that women are wearing to yoga classes. And it is, I don't have any examples right in front of me, but it is, like, so biting. It is so subtly biting, her just pointing out what is written on these shirts. It is delightful. Sorry, that was probably not worth the interruption since I didn't have
any examples. Slayed all day for me last night was a long conversation about the restaurant Sadigi's, which came up somehow. I've talked about this on TVTL extensively, but it's this weird restaurant in Bellingham that never has any customers, but somehow, nevertheless, it persists. And 100% my most successful material, the thing that the audience most related to me on, was the topic of Siddiqui's restaurant before the show started. I really had the crowd in the palm of my hand for that. And then after that, it was, you know, I'd give it a solid medium.
Well, that reminds me of something, because the last time, this I think will be a Ford promo, because the last time I remember the topic of you being discussed on Reddit was when somebody caught wind of our conversation about Siddiqui's and your experience there. You wanted to go in and see what it was actually like. And then some people were also raising questions about that restaurant on Twitter. Like, is this a drug front? Like, how is this place open? What is going on with this place? And you were quoted, I think, and maybe even that show was linked to.
Which kind of freaked me out, because I was like, I don't want Mr. Siddiqui to see this. Can I actually play you this? It's just a minute long. Somebody named Aaron on Twitter. What if I just started? That was my new thing.
Twitter.
Just Twitter. Or what if I – is that like a glottal stop? Twitter? Is that a split infinitive or a glottal stop when people say like button?
It's not a split Twitter. Infinitive. So.
Okay. Well, it must be a glottal stop then. What if I started glottal stopping Twitter? That sounds more like Cockney. Hey, governor, you going to go down to Twitter? But no, but more like if I just started saying Twitter. Okay. So on Twitter – somebody named Erin posted this. She was videotaping this or whatever on her phone. This is me on stage last night. This is about 12% of my total Siddiqui's material, by the way. But this is just me. I don't know how the audio is going to be, but I'm going to play this for you.
Have eaten at Siddiqui's.
So I'm asking the crowd, like, how many of you have eaten at Siddiqui's?
I've eaten at Siddiqui's. I went there to find out if it was a drug front or not. I am convinced that that is the business model. People going into Siddiqui's to figure out if it's a drug front.
That's the clientele. It's not drug clientele, it's drug curious.
It's just people going, how has this been here on Lakeway for 30 years? Well, the guy, Mr. Siddiqui, who runs it, is really sweet. It is not a drug front. It's also not really a restaurant, I'll be honest. I ordered a salad, and he said, I can't do salad today because I'd have to open the bag.
So there you go. That was the high point of the night for me.
Just kidding. That was the crowd shushing you.
Yeah, I figured. So that was how it went down last night. It was, like I said, it was ultimately extremely fun. Really, after the show, the highlight for me was after the show getting to talk to a bunch of folks. Like I said, some of them were tens. I met Jason, the guy from the airport who tells Matt, the rental car guy, when he's mentioned on the show.
Wow. That's a weird, like, modern version of, I guess, passing cassette tapes around or something.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and I met a bunch of people, and I'm not gonna be able to recall everyone's name off the top of my head, but that was a funny moment where he said, so I was talking to him, he said, yeah, so my kind of weird TBTL claim to fame is I'm the guy who tells the other guy when he's mentioned. thanks to everybody who came out last night. It was a fun, a weird night. And they definitely have to start charging for tickets, I think, on their future. They're doing this like 5 more times. I don't think I'm involved in any of the other ones that I know of. They're doing like 4 or 5 more like live in the community shows. And I'm like, you guys need to get a metal detector. You need to pat people down. If anyone has a Pacifica tote bag or any Bernie gear, you need to basically keep those people out of there. Not for political reasons, but because that was the other thing. It was like, oh, dear God, like if the subject of Bernie came up, it was, you know. And that's not a comment about the politics of Bernie Sanders or like, you know, whether or not he's a person that Democrats should be supporting. It's just a certain kind of person gets really – they feel really emboldened to just yell stuff to you about Bernie. It was like, oh, my God, you guys, can we please just get through this together?
Yeah, yeah. I'm tempted to tell you about 30 seconds of a radio program I heard yesterday where they were interviewing two people who are heavily involved in Burning Man.
Tell me about that right
no,
after
No, no,
no.
That's all I'm going to say.
Tell me about it right after the break.
I got no, that's all I got to say is I heard 30 seconds of it and I said, yep, you guys sound like burners. In the same way you might identify the energy of a Burning Man person or a Bernie Sanders person, I think a Burning Man person also has a certain vibe. And I heard 30 seconds and I turned it off. So that's where the story ends.
What if Bernie set up an if he set up an event just like right down the playa from Burning Man and it was called Bernie Man?
That makes so much sense.
He was just like, it's so dusty.
It makes so much sense. You know what? Yeah. Maybe he is. I'm going to look at that during the
1% are using all of the bottled water. You know, I honestly think maybe it's that Bernie Sanders is easy to impersonate. Mm-hmm. That's definitely not my worst impersonation.
Not at all. All right. Sounds good. So that was my great story about listening to the radio for 30 seconds. I guess
good
we can
stuff.
Break now. Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Thank you. Working on that.
Okay. Quick break, and then we'll come back and play you this tape of this guy who I am just absolutely fascinated with who's out there. He's an amateur botanist. I'll just tell you this. The name of his YouTube page is Crime Pays, But Botany Doesn't. That's all you need to know about this guy. So we'll talk about that coming back in a minute on TVTL. Oh, man. I have this on vinyl. I think I'm going to, today at some point, I'm going to, like, I have this little record player, one of those cheapo ones. It's, like, in a suitcase. I think I'm going to bring it upstairs and just play this record in the kitchen and go around all of my various Sonos technological innovations and just listen to Elvis Costello on vinyl.
Yeah,
I love this guy.
This is a good one. This is his second record? This year's model. Hey, by the way, since you already lost the bet about bringing up my dream, I got to say, I just when we go to a break, I have a little notepad next to me here. This isn't real life. This is not in my dream life. I have a little notepad and a pen, and I always, you know, write down, okay, this is the time code where we went to the break. I'll need to, you know, edit that later and whatever, do what I got to do. And I picked up my pen, which I've been using all week, and I remembered, oh, shoot, this pen is getting near the end of its ink. And I suddenly remembered, I'm still in that mode. I've been awake for, what, 90 minutes now? I'm still in that mode where I was like, oh, damn, that made its way into the dream, too. I had a pen that was running out of ink. How about that for just, like, adding to the stress dream? You're, like, trying to get ready to go on the radio and, you know, again, it's just a stress dream. The time, the clock is ticking down, and then you have a pen that just sort of works. You know, it's not even totally dry. It just sort of works.
We this comes up almost every time we talk about stress dreams, but I can't remember who it might have been. Carrie or somebody the other day was.
That's my wife.
I think it was Carrie. She was talking about a stress dream, and she was pointing out that what it always is in the stress dream is it's not even the event or the thing that you're like. In the case of your dream, it was that you were going to have to host a radio show at the last moment. It's that the pen's running out of ink. Or for me, if it's like I have a stress dream that I'm supposed to do stand-up, it's that I'm trying to find a pencil and paper to write down some bullet points.
Because
in my mind, if I can just write down – if I can just compose my thoughts and have any sort of plan before I go on stage, then I'll be fine. And it's the not finding of the pencil that is where all the stress ends up. And I think that's what happens in stress dreams. It's usually like you need something that you think will alleviate your stress for the thing that is making you stressed out, but you can't get whatever that small detail is handled.
Yeah, it's just always I only remember a little tiny snippet of a dream that I had years and years and years and years ago, and to me it epitomized a stress dream. I was at a water park carrying a giant inflatable something. It was just like a raft, but you know how those things are just kind of hard to manage.
Yeah.
And I was walking against a crowd. All the crowd is going one way. I'm walking against the crowd with a giant inflatable raft. And that's all I remember. Oh, but for me, God. Like, that epitomizes the feeling of a stress dream.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is, like, anybody can visualize that. Now, I have the opposite experience of that, which was one of my great sport memories, is after the NFC Championship when the Seahawks beat the San Francisco 49ers. To go to the Super Bowl. This was the Super Bowl they would eventually win. And Richard Sherman famously jumped up and tipped the ball at the very end of the game in the end zone. It tipped the ball to Malcolm Smith, and we intercepted, and the game was over. I had been lucky enough to weasel my way into the Alaska Airlines like suite for that game with Kerry, and they had a life-size Richard Sherman cutout, which still exists somewhere in my – I don't know if it's at my parents' house or what. But anyway, this life-size Richard Sherman cutout. And I remember going out into the night at the CenturyLink field, and just an ocean of people. And we're – you know, it's almost 90% Seahawk fans. And we're just in like absolute just – I don't know. Just – we are just over the moon with happiness. And I'm just carrying above my head through this sea of – happy people, this life-size Richard Sherman who has just won the game for us, and everyone's high-fiving Richard Sherman. And it was just like everything in the world is good right now.
Yeah, that sounds great. I would someday, you know, we sometimes will get on these things where you will say, oh, this has got to be one of my top five sports moments. You should take some time and think about what the actual top five is, and we could talk about it in a no point at some point, because I'd be interested to hear that. We always talk about, I don't know if it still makes your list, but our kind of somewhat pathetic but still magical
Dude,
miracle
I know
on
what you're
dirt.
Gonna say, and yeah. It's not pathetic. That's in my top five, bro, for yeah. a bunch of reasons. One, because it's just like that never happens in baseball. And two, because of where you and I were. That adds to it. Like
where we were mentally and where we were physically.
Mentally and physically. And, yeah, guess where yeah. we were.
I knew I should have taken that left point right. in Albuquerque.
We wow. were literally in Albuquerque.
How do we end up? Sometimes the show really does just sort of take on a life of its own.
Synchronicity, brah. Synchronicity. Yeah, like that was for the three people who aren't familiar with that story. You and I were on our RV trip to Austin, and we were sitting out in the dark in Albuquerque outside the RV listening to the Mariners play, and Mike Zunino came up to bat. I'm going to say there was two outs.
Mm-hmm.
It was a situation where we needed a home run not only to win the game, but we were going to lose the game if he didn't hit the home run. It wasn't like it was – I always I categorize these things, whether it's a dramatic field goal or a dramatic hit, with – were you going to lose if it didn't work?
Right. It wasn't you the I mean? Game-winning score that happened in the sixth inning right. and then nobody scored after that. Like,
or
no,
it wasn't a tie game and right. then you did a thing and then they won, because that just means if you didn't do the thing, the game would have continued. This was a deal where he hits a home run and we win, or he strikes out and we lose. And you and I were sitting there, and let's be honest, there we weren't not drinking whiskey or shots of something, and – he did it. He hit this home run just like the in the most like dramatic of fashion, and it was definitely top five for me, no question about it.
I think a part of it too was, you know, I think that was one of the longest days drives as well. Mm. I think we were listening via my app on my phone. I remember
yes.
a storm came in right as we were kind of getting near where we were where we were camping, and or at least parking or whatever the word is when you have an RV. And I remember you were I didn't have to do any of the driving, but you were driving. It was one of those big heavy, you know, plains storms or desert storms, and then it dried up right as we parked and showed up too. So I think there was just kind of a relief of stress and everything, and then like freaking Zunino.
Well, we were talking up to it too, you and I, just like, is there any chance? Could mm-hmm. he do this? And then I probably was making all kinds of vows to the old gods and the new about like, can we get, you know, it was just like, it was one of those, it didn't just happen sort of accidentally, like you and like you're at your house and you're in the other room dealing
right,
with something.
Right,
and you hear Dave Sims yelling about doing the delivery you know, to the truck. It wasn't one of those things. It was like we were 100% focused in on this thing and praying it would happen. And I mean, there's probably a 2% chance of that, of a home run happening, like on two strikes in that situation. It's just so unlikely. And then it happened, and it was glorious. So,
and of course, it happened against the Twins. Sorry, Stubot.
Oh, Stubot. Well, it's not.
And it was also what also makes it funny is it was a totally meaningless game. I mean, when were we taking that road?
I don't think it was that meaningless at the time, at least in my mind. Let me just say, because they're playing meaningless games now, and you're much better about following them than I am, which it shows for all of my bluster about being a true fan, I'm not being a true fan this season because I'm just kind of, I'm checked out. I think I was only as jazzed as I was because we were still kind of like there was a long shot chance that we could hang on to our position or get it together. Because remember also we were listening. Oh, I'm combining. I'm combining road trips in my mind. I'm remembering the next year when we were driving and listening to them just get absolutely railed by Boston. Remember?
Right. I remember that was a different time. Yes. Yeah.
The dark night of the soul. Oh, God.
Actually, you know what the funny thing is? You know when that was? I think that was – I forgot that it was extra inning. It was the 12th inning. It was according to something I just looked up, I think it was – wait, no. This says 2018. That must have been 2017 when that happened, right?
I don't know.
Yes, it would have been June 2017. I think I did find it, but whatever. Actually, you know what? Let's just do this. It's 30 seconds long. What could possibly go wrong? And then we will move on, I promise.
Okay.
Let's just see what happens here because I think this is it. Come on. Don't be muted.
Set by Kinsler. And the right-hander's 2-1 pitch. Swing and a fly ball. Deep to center field. Buxton going back. Looking up. Goodbye, baseball. Magic in the corner of Edgerrin Days.
Scatman's world.
With a walk-off. Two-out. Two-run. Home run. Here in the bottom of the ninth inning. And Zunino is getting mobbed at home plate.
Yep, it was,
and we're
it was
just
5-4
like
bottom of the ninth.
Running in circles around this card table in the dirt in Albuquerque.
Because we believed.
It takes me right back to that moment.
And you're right, it was early enough in the season. I have a vague memory of like being, of thinking like, oh, are we, like just going back and forth around 500 around that time. But you're right, it was earlier enough in the season that it wasn't totally, it couldn't be totally meaningless on June
8th. Yeah, it was amazing. You know what's so crazy, Andrew, is that we were doing that. There we were in Albuquerque having such a wonderful time, and it was still largely in service of our job of being the hosts of this show, which brings me to the thought of how lucky we are that this is our job and that that was our job and that these donors of the day, their donations to TBTL make this a thing that can exist. Talking about Alice Weimers and Gabe Claire of Davidson, North Carolina. How about John Zander of Olympia, Washington? How about Robin Burlingham of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan? Robin Burlingham, the Bay City, the city of subdued donations. Thank you, Robin. Burlingham is like one letter off from Bellingham.
Very
That's
close.
Amazing. Thanks, Robin. Brian Covey of Seattle, Washington. Thank you, Brian. Nathan Halley of Chesterfield, Missouri. I'm going to reach deep into my memory banks and say I think Nathan was on the show talking about his roller skating exploits.
That, oh,
many
wow.
Years ago.
That was for radio days, no? No? Maybe not.
I think podcast days.
Okay.
God, who knows?
But I was definitely
get back
a
to me when you
then,
hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth, Nathan. Then I'll really remember it. And then Robert Liao of Dallas, Texas. Robert, Nathan, Brian, Robin, John, and then Gabe and Alice. Thank you so much for donating to TBTL. Thanks for making this possible. We really would not be here without you. We're going to be going to Minnesota in a couple weeks, and we're going to be talking to people in the public radio universe, and they're probably going to go like, so how does this work? You come on the air, you talk about dreams, and then people give money to the network, and then it's you get to do it for your job, and we'll go, yeah, that's exactly how it works. Step back, Terry Gross.
That's
we
right.
We got our own business model, and it is crushing it. Thanks again, everybody, for donating to TBTL. We would not be here without you.
Thank you, baby. Thank you, baby.
welcome to Top Story.
I saw this on Twitter yesterday, just listed under heavy Chicago accent guy saves coyote. And I was like, yeah, give that a day in court. And I clicked on it, and the tape is just kind of amazing. I'm going to play some of it for you. It's so, as I've already described, it's this little, juvenile coyote, kind of a pup, that's in a field of tall grass running around. And this guy has realized that this pup is really in bad shape, and he's sort of trying to calm it down and figure out how he's going to, like, help it. But the coyote is obviously quite on edge, as it were. And it's kind of nerve-wracking watching him try to pet this thing, because you just at any moment you think it's just going to latch right onto his
hand. Yeah, it's almost making a hissing sound, I think, at one point. It's like its jaws wide open.
Yeah, it's freaked out. And anyway, I'm just going to play a little bit of this for you.
Hey, shh. Come here. Hey. Shh. You're okay.
Oh, let me mention too, by the way, there's some swearing in this. This guy is deploys swear words fairly liberally, but anyway, he's now the coyote's running away from him, and then finally it just stops and it's like lying down in the tall grass, and he's able to get a little bit closer to it.
But fuck with you, don't worry about it. No, you're not that tough. Come here. Hey, you gotta go to a rehab facility or something.
I've heard that before.
Listen to me. Hey, you probably got mange. Maybe you got rabies. I should have brought my goddamn gloves. Shh, it's okay.
Everything he's saying to this coyote has been said about me at one point. I'm telling you. You probably got mange.
It's okay. Shh. Shh. You need help. You know, and I just don't want to get bitten. I want to help you, but I don't want to get bitten. Did some redneck shoot your parents? What's going on? Come on, hey. Shh, it's okay. I'm not going to fuck with you. Not in a bad way. But please don't bite me. But I've had my rabies titer, if it makes you feel any better. Shh. It's okay. What happened to your fox?
Now, because the accent is so thick, I was like, does he think this is a fox?
Oh, what happened to your fox?
He's saying folks, but he's, what happened to your fox?
Huh? Did rednecks kill your folks? I think you gotta come with me. I was gonna take you to a rehab. My friend Cece works in a rehab.
Oh, yeah, I heard she does good work.
Mm-hmm.
Shh, it's okay. That was cute. You think you're tough. You're trying to show me you're tough. I believe you. I believe you're so tough.
Now, at this point, he's gotten the coyote pup has relaxed enough. I mean, it's still breathing very heavily and it's freaked out, but it's so kind of emaciated and out of it that I think it's just can't run much more. And it's B, it seems to have realized that this guy is not trying to hurt it because he's able to pet it, which is kind of an amazing moment if you think about it.
It is.
Like that through his voice, I guess, or just through his sort of non-threatening demeanor, he's able to somehow, again, it was not unlike me and that rabbit, Andrew. No, but in this case, the fact that he's able to actually like sort of start patting the side of this coyote and just kind of that it's letting that happen is a sort of incredible thing to witness.
Come on, let's go. Oh my God, you're fucking emaciated. Please don't bite me. Please don't bite me or give me mange.
People have said that to me before, so there you go.
I keep expecting to say, da bears. You know what got the bears in 1987? Mange. Ditka had mange.
Oh, you shit too. Uh oh.
Yeah, the little coyote was so scared that it basically went to the bathroom. But it again is now letting him actually pick it up, which is it just like it warms your heart. It's also so heartbreaking because you just think about this little coyote. Now listen, whatever, I know that the coyotes in urban environments, it's like bad news for pets and whatever. But it's like in this moment, putting aside all whatever negative coyote feelings might be out there, you feel a lot of love for this little guy. So then he gets the coyote back to his like a truck or whatever van. And it's in the back of his van. He's talking to
it. You're probably sick. Okay.
Have we not established that I'm not going to eat you? Don't you believe me yet?
This is in the van. I say this, by the way, to anytime I see a steak on a plate in a restaurant, I walk up to it and I stare directly into the steak and I say,
established that I'm not going to eat you. You're pretty underweight and, you know, you didn't want any of that turkey jerky I gave you. So that makes me worried. I just seen a tick jump ship. Which means that either there's some sort of problem with your blood flow or the tick itself thinks you don't stand a chance. But I'm going to see that you have a chance.
That's such a great line. I just seen a tick jump ship.
That's a bad sign.
That's a terrible
tick
sign.
Tick jump ship. Which means that either there's some sort of problem with your blood flow or the tick itself thinks you don't stand a chance. But I'm going to see that you have a chance. I was gonna, you know what I was gonna do? Is take you to a nice rehab facility, and then they'll release you back to the wild, and you can go eat some feral cats and squirrels and stuff like that, you know?
So there you go. That
it's
is
so sweet, but
it's so
I
adorable.
Need the follow up. I watched that on your Twitter feed yesterday, and it ends there. And I thought, oh, this is going to take us to the rehab, and then we're going to see everybody happy and healthy later on. And of course, it's just a cell phone cam. I don't know why I was expecting that, but it really left me. I was like, wow. Like if you told me that this is just the trailer for an entire like docudrama or like a documentary series on Netflix, I would sit down and watch it all right now. I am so like I'm not some huge fan of coyotes. I find them to be wily, but I would we'll cut it out. But I was so invested in this little guy. It's like watching any nature thing, right? Like sometimes you're rooting for the lion if that's the perspective of the film crew, or sometimes you root for the gazelle. In this case, I was really rooting for that little baby coyote.
You know what's weird? I always root for the gazelle.
Yeah.
Even though the lions are not less deserving of the right to be alive. I guess if it was human v. lion, I'm rooting lion every time. Like poachers v. lion. But then if it's lion v. gazelle, I'm rooting for the gazelle. Even though if the lions don't catch the gazelles, they don't live on. You know what I mean? And this is these things are so inconsistent in my mind. It's just... You know, whatever my heart is telling me in the moment. Andrew, here's the good news. I might be able to find out what happened to that coyote because I did a deep dive and figured out who this guy is. His name is Tony Santor, and he has a sort of crazy story. He grew up in Chicago, as the accent would indicate. He says that he grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood and got out of Chicago, went to California for college, but then dropped out of college and then just – started riding the rails like hobo style, and in doing that got to see a lot of the country and just started getting really interested in botany and plants, and which I guess is redundant because being interested in botany is being interested in plants, but you know, just in case some people out there didn't know what botany meant. Anyway, I found that a Chicago public television station caught up with him and actually had him go out into a field and talk about plants. So this is just a little snippet of that from the Chicago public television piece.
Santor is an amateur botanist.
This is one of my favorites right here. This is Silphium terebinthinaceum. It's a relative of sunflowers. It's an Asteraceae. Well, it's important for pollinators. Birds eat the seeds, and it's just it taps way deep down into the prairie soil. And just, I mean, it's habitat for wildlife, if anything. For me, it just makes me feel nice when I've been outside dealing with most of the human infrastructure that I normally find so revolting. This is this just calms me down a little bit.
I love he's totally genuine. Like yeah. I thought for a minute when I was watching the coyote video that he was it's like a shtick or something.
Sure, yeah.
But by all appearances, this is really how he talks. As evidenced by this, this is his real love, as we've already mentioned, is botany. This is him talking about a barrel cactus.
Okay, so basically what you got going on here is a pretty common species of what you could call a barrel cactus. This is a Ferrocactus wislizenii, apparently named after a dead guy named Wislizine, whatever the fuck, I don't know, Wilson, maybe it was Wilson, who knows. But either way, that doesn't really matter. Plants shouldn't really be named after people anyways. It's pretty egotistical and obnoxious. But you can still look at those flowers and be pretty amazed by what's going on. I mean, you just what you're seeing is typical cactus morphology. Just dozens upon dozens of stamens. And then it looks like you actually have quite a few
stigmas in there, which, you know, if you look at some of the other genera, such as Echinocereus, the stigmas on a ferrocactus are quite different. On Echinocereus, all those stigmas are lobed. On ferrocactus, you can see they actually look, well, it looks kind of like a weird squid tentacles coming out of the inner part of that perianth. Perianth, of course, just refers to the corolla, which in cactus, they don't really have petals or sepals. They're quite indistinct. I guess they're what you could call tepals. Either way, you can see there's quite a few of them, and they got many bracts. They got the bracts. They got bracts, and then
bracts?
Another thing with ferrocactus you want to pay attention to. Oh, look at all that. Is all that pollen in there? Oh, yeah. That's a lot of pollen in there. You see all that yellow stuff, all the shit that I think the ants smeared it around. They come in here and they do their thing, and they just smear the shit all over the place. You know, they make a mess. You know, it's like a breakfast tray after a toddler was eating, you know. They're just really messy. I mean, I kind of eat like that, too, so I can't fault them too much. But you...
I would absolutely watch a Netflix botany series that this guy hosts. I mean, it's like... I'm surprised that he's not. I mean, certainly it's been noted. I played that little bit from the TV report about him, and you know, this Kaio video is getting a ton of attention. But I'm surprised this guy is not more kind of quote unquote viral or well known, because he really seems to know his stuff, which is fascinating. He says in the TV special, he said that, you know, because he was riding the rails, he would just go to a lot of libraries and he would just read free books about botany, you know, read science books because he just was interested and it was also somewhere to go. Like, I don't know how this guy's not doing a regular show. And if he did do a regular show, I would watch it in a heartbeat. He's the David Attenborough that America deserves.
Yes.
Although I know David Attenborough is more like, you know, like animal stuff, but he's the Luther Burbank meets David Attenborough that America deserves.
I mean, it sounds like he got a little attention locally, but after this thing has gone viral, yeah, I'd almost be more surprised if we don't see him pop up in some sort of a project that somebody gets behind.
Should I pitch it to CBS Sunday Morning?
Oh, yeah.
Do a profile of this guy.
Maybe. Oh, you should, actually. That would be a really cool idea. No joke.
What I love about him is that he's legit with this. It's almost kind of like I was saying about Mike Posner, the musician who was walking across America and got bit by a rattlesnake. What I appreciated about him was that he was actually doing it. Mm-hmm. He had actually done it for months on end, as opposed to it just being – like what I would do, which would be I would dip my toe in the water, but then I would realize, I don't know. This isn't as fun as I thought it was going to be. I like that this guy – I've been all over his YouTube page now, and a lot of some of his videos might have like 2,000 views. It's not like everything he does has millions of views, but I like that he is really out there just walking around that excited about plants and just – I mean, I like the genuineness of it. I like that it's not just a shtick where he's like a upright Citizens Brigade improver who thought of a conceit for a character, which is weird Chicago guy who likes plants, because that would also be an amazing improv character.
I could also see a world like probably right now as we speak somewhere somebody is digging up like one Reddit comment that he posted in 2015 that's like anti-Hillary Clinton, and now the headline tomorrow
it's
will be
duck time.
Exactly. It's going to be like Chicago Coyote Man is problematic.
I know. Look for it on a blog near you. Speaking of weird things in the bowels of the internet, I got a text from our friend Katie, and it just I said at the top of the show that this came in last night. She said people are so weird on the internet, and I was actually had just walked out of the theater after doing the show, so I didn't really have time to look at it until this morning when I looked at what she had sent the link to. It's a Reddit thread about calling in sick. So people just writing about the idea of calling in sick. And they start talking about different things. This is, I guess, people in Seattle. Maybe it's the Seattle. I know nothing about Reddit, which is a really – that's a real liability for me as somebody who is trying to talk about sort of things that are in the zeitgeist. The fact that I don't really know how to navigate Reddit is – I need to work on that because it's where so much interesting stuff happens and gets started. But anyway, people are writing about calling in sick and local media. And somebody says, I watch the local news just to see things like this. We'll get more background noise while scrolling Reddit. I don't know what that's a reference to. And then someone says, hey, it's nice to turn on and listen to the morning news while getting ready in the morning. And then someone says, are there any broadcast stations that do local programming other than Q13, blah, blah, blah. And then out of the blue, somebody writes, Luke Burbank used to call in sick to Cairo Radio and then tweet from SeaTac about boarding his flight to Vegas. He got away with it because his dad was the station manager or something.
What? Is there any even nugget of – is there like even a nugget of truth like one time that happened or something?
No. Not that I remember. I can't –
I mean not that one – sorry. To be clear, I'm not asking if one time was your dad the station manager of Cairo. I know that, but you know
– I would have – that would have been a big deal in my life. Oh, my God. Walt Burbank running Cairo would have been – amazing.
Yeah.
He would have just been like, we don't have enough shows about Lord of the Rings. I went 2 hours dedicated to recreating Lord of the Rings weaponry.
We're putting all of our local resources into after dark programming that will all be Lord of the Rings, all loader related. You don't talk
but
about
not
that
after dark.
The day.
This is in the middle of the day. I need drive time.
Okay.
This is drive time. There's also going to be we're going to play 4 hours of Dave Brubeck.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to let's do the Walter Burbank lineup would be from he gets up super early because he's a dad. So it's like 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. will be World War II model building.
I already stand this station, as you might say.
And then let's go from 9 to noon. That's going to be pipe tobacco talk. And then we transition into the Brubeck 4-hour shift, and then it's time for loader talk. And then at night, it'll be something about British television shows that you're currently BitTorrenting.
The USB hour.
Exactly. And then we do 3 hours on Broadchurch, the BBC show that I'm currently into. Anyway, I find this so funny. I don't really want to give this person any attention, but the name of the person who posted this is – it's terrible and dumb, and it has a kind of – how would I say this? It bears a certain resemblance to the kind of nickname that the person who set up Luke Burbank is the king of – I'll use this word, but Luke Burbank is the king. Well, let's just say this. Luke Burbank is the king of a gay slur, but they didn't say gay slur. It's the way that person, the nicknames that person would give themselves was very much like the nickname this person has given themselves in this Reddit page.
Mm.
By the way, this is from like 7 hours ago or whatever, whenever Katie saw it.
Can you email it to me, by the way? For some reason, I'm doing all kinds of searching because I spend a little bit more time on Reddit than you do. So I wouldn't mind exploring.
Is your handle man boobs McTasty? Because if that means this is you.
No, I'm man under boobs McTasty.
Man under boob sweat?
Yeah.
McStankies?
Ugh. I'm sorry
I
engaged.
Dream file and smoke it.
Regrets. I
couldn't
a few.
Find a super chamois to absorb the underboob sweat. Okay, I just texted it to you.
All right,
so you can
here.
See it there, and I don't know if that'll help you. But what would be very interesting to me is if it is the same person who literally like 11 years ago was obsessed with trying to like shit talk me and also just say things that are obviously untrue. Like I can't stress this enough. I am not in any way threatened by this post, nor do I care. I find it genuinely fascinating. If there is a person out there in the world who has been for all these years still obsessed with trying to say weird shit about me that's not true. I mean, that is dedication, and I kind of tip my cap to
sure.
It's the same person.
Yeah. No, I've been waiting to find out what the reveal is because you mentioned at the top of the show that somebody was making this claim on Reddit. I'm not getting any. So I didn't realize you don't have a link. You have a screen cap. So I'm going to have to like do a little Googling
around.
No,
I know what I have a link to.
That's OK. But I don't have to do this on the fly. But I do like, although it does lead to some corners of the internet that at some point you have to say, OK, I'm not going to continue pulling this thread anymore for the sake of my cookies and and my internet history. But Reddit is fascinating because it's not all bad. That's the thing. I think you and I both kind of
I don't feel this way anymore. I think you feel this way maybe a little bit because you're not as familiar with it. You think of Reddit as being a little bit of a darker place than even, say, Twitter or certainly Facebook. And I understand that because there's less kind of regulations as far as what you can post. But it's also, I think, so much vaster. And there are just so many small little, like, you know, if you're interested in any small little thing, there is a subgroup for it on Reddit. And
yeah.
So I find that fascinating. And it's what I find really fascinating is when Genevieve dropped Twitter, I don't know what, like a year and a half, 2 years ago, she's now her main social interaction or social media interaction, if she's doing it at all, is on Reddit. Like, she has her little groups that she likes to go to, and every now and then she'll mention it, and it's kind of funny. Like, I think that Reddit can be a dark place, but it's so vast that that's probably not the majority of it.
Well, and as I mentioned the other day, the sense I have is that they do a pretty robust amount of managing and monitoring Reddit because they don't want it to become 4chan, and that's been, I think, part of the success of Reddit is that it's free form, but it's not so free form that it's just all, you know, weird, horrible right wing troll, you know, white supremacy or something,
mm-hmm.
Which the internet tends to devolve into when it's unregulated, unfortunately.
Yeah, which is weird, though, because that is on there, though. I mean, again.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, I mean, no, okay, there's plenty of stuff like that on Reddit, I think. So, I mean, I don't know how much, but, and especially because Reddit has true anonymity. Like, you can sign up for an account. You don't have to put in an email address or anything. It's very old school in that way. So,
well, you signed up for Man Boobs McTasty, and we have no way of proving that's you, but I now know it's you.
No, I'm Man Boobs McTasty 69. It's not me, dude. Yeah, so anyway, I got this link from you now. I'm not going to get distracted by it right now, but it is kind of fun and also scary, though. Sometimes you'll be in a sub and then you'll see somebody comment. The last time I did this was after I got done watching that new Jim Jarmusch film, The Dead Don't Die, right? And I mm-hmm. just, it was the type of movie where when it ended, you just kind of, you know, I think the ending was somewhat controversial or definitely interesting. It wasn't a tidy little ending. So it's the type of movie when you're done with it, and you're just like, what are people saying about this? And like, I had some fan theories already, like leaving the theater. So I wanted to see if other people, I don't remember what they were and it doesn't matter. But I found myself on Reddit. And then you can do this thing where you find a thread and you're reading all kinds of various opinions. But then one person comes and one person flies in hot for this hottie a little bit too hard. And you're like, what's this person's deal? What's Man Boobs McTasty's deal? So then you click on that person. You start seeing all the other things they've commented on. Like, it's a really fun way to, like, pull on strings. But then also, if you're somewhat, like I unfortunately am, intrigued by the people who seem to misbehave, then you're like, what's this dude's deal? And then you find yourself in MAGA town or whatever.
That's also dangerous for me because it's like I wonder – that's an interesting question is like, am I more inclined to follow a thread if it's somebody who I think I don't like versus somebody I like?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I followed one I really liked with this guy, Tony Santor, so that was a positive one. But I am – you know, I didn't even think about that. But what I could do is I could go find this person who posted that weird thing about my dad being the GM of Cairo, and then I could just see what else are they doing. And I could definitely lose some time on that, which is such a bad outcome because it's like now my life – you know, part of my life is being taken up in viewing somebody who I'm going to assume traffics in negativity, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever, possibly. But I'm probably, honestly, it's like that famous David Foster Wallace quote that I deploy on the show so much, talking about fear is the easiest emotion to generate, or sorry, anger, I guess, is the easiest emotion to generate in people. You know, and he was saying that as it related to talk radio. But it's kind of like when my anger gets stimulated, that's a strong emotion in me. Mm-hmm. And it's much more likely that I will ride that wave into the further and darker corners of the internet.
Yeah, it can feel like a disease. Like, I really try not to engage in that too much. But on those occasions, and I maybe I'm just, again, thinking in this time that I was reading about The Dead Don't Die. And, like, I remember I came home from the movie, belly full of popcorn, laid down. It's like mid-afternoon, maybe late afternoon. my favorite time to see movies are matinees. It will not surprise you to hear that. And I just start scrolling and then clicking and then pulling on threads. And then when you do find yourself in an ugly place and you're just like, wow, how much time has passed? Why were those the emotions that that I decided to follow instead of, hey, somebody wrote something delightful here. What other delightful things have they written online? Like, you really feel like you got, I don't know, I can sort of feel like, boy, I just got sick for a little bit, or the sickness got me.
Yeah, it is, because it's like when you're if you get down in that sort of like icky, you know, stew of anger and negativity and all the bad things, and you just kind of are simmering in it, you're still simmering in it, you know? And it's like that happens with me with Twitter a lot, because what'll happen is there's a big trend right now where you take like a tweet by some right-wing jerk, some Ben Shapiro type, and then you just dunk on it a bunch, and then everybody dunks on it. And what I wrote on Twitter, and then I later deleted it because I didn't want to sound preachy, was and also I guess I wanted to reserve the right to do it if I felt like it, is it's basically the dream scenario if you're Jacob Wall or some just extremely ridiculous provocateur who just wants to think they're relevant, and you put out a bad tweet, and then it gets retweeted 4 million times with people yelling at you. It just confirms, A, that you are somehow part of the conversation and important to the world, and B, that you are unfairly maligned by the crazy liberal left. So you're really giving these trolls exactly – it's the best case scenario. I think I said something like, if there's a MAGA make-a-wish, it's that would happen. I took it down because I was like, I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to tell people what they should do on Twitter. But I will say that – I do find myself sometimes going down these rabbit holes where it's like somebody – Chuck Woolery tweets some horrible take. That's the other thing that happens. It's like when you're all out of career options, you can always find, you can always like align yourself with MAGA culture. And if you had any modicum of fame before, they will be so excited to have you. Sadly, I will also point out, as a white guy, I'm not really the person who should be weighing in on this, but there seems to be this – I've noticed an interesting thread of people of color who are MAGA'd out and are held in very high esteem in that community, I think because it probably makes the MAGA people think, we're not racist. Mm-hmm. Look, here's a person of color who supports the president. And I'm always like, oh, buddy, I think you might be getting played. But anyway, I've just lost too much time in my life deep diving on the Twitter feeds of people who are putting out bad takes. And I'm with you that, like, I don't feel good at the end. I feel like, oh, I just lived in that world for too long. I'm trying to do that less.
Yeah, now. Me too. And I agree with everything you just said, by the way. I know you love it when I say that. But
do.
Yeah, that idea of like,
gets
I
me
just
out of bed in the morning.
I just
the
like,
hope I hear that.
I would prefer that in so many cases we just didn't put more, you know, oxygen on the fire when it comes to people getting angry and then retweeting and retweeting and retweeting.
Yeah, those are the moments when I really feel like I need to just stop looking at Twitter, definitely first thing in the morning, because it really is. And I know we've talked about this plenty on the show, but it really is. It's a kind of a bad habit for me. And it really does put a bunch of just kind of like sucky feelings in my head right before like it's time to go take on the day. And I'm like, I don't think this is, you know, I just want to. I need to listen to a recording of Rick Riz calling that Zanino home every morning. That needs to play in my house instead of Coffee Lover. In fact, I could probably make that my alarm. What do you think would happen to my life if that was my alarm every morning? I swear to God, I would become like – I'd be the non-douche Elon Musk.
I mean
– I would invent new technologies. That'd be amazing.
You'd also be single again, so I guess that would open up some avenues for you.
You know, it's time for Carrie to live her life, honestly. Fly, fly, little bird.
If Carrie doesn't appreciate the June 8th, 2017 walk-off home run by Mike Zanino, what are you guys even doing together?
I know, honestly, we just want different things for our lives.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week, oh my gosh, and it just makes me so happy.
You can make you happy too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter, no joke. So again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter, and we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, we are just about at the end of the program, but we should do some music for your weekend. Andrew, would you like to kick us off? You said during the break to me that you were having a little trouble finding your song. Did you find it, or do you want me to go first?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna play this. I guess I'm not. This is where I'm getting in my own head too much. Music for a weekend should be, hey, this is a song that I'm listening to this weekend, what I'm getting into. It doesn't always have to be like some new thing that people haven't heard before. Although I think some people appreciate this segment as being a gateway to new music. But I guess I'm a little bit like, I'm going to take a very, very popular song that was used in a very, very popular movie just a couple of years ago. But it came I think I was outside reading and I was just listening to a playlist and this song came on. And I realized I can't do anything when this song comes on. I can't read except just stare like a Luke Burbank. This song comes on and it grips me so emotionally that all I can do when this song is on is stare. So I hope I'm never operating heavy machinery when this song comes on. It's the song Ooh Child that you've heard a lot. And, it was in the Defenders of the Universe Marvel movie recently.
Well, it was in Crooklyn back in the day. That's when I remember
it's been
it being.
In a million things.
The Crooklyn soundtrack is not to be missed, and does, I believe, you know what, I think it has this, it also has Mr. Big Stuff on it.
Okay, yeah, I know that song. Yeah, I don't know who does it. And I wouldn't have known who does this song. It's the Five Stair Steps. And apparently they were almost like kind of a proto-Jackson 5. They were a family. There were some little kids making making music. As a matter of fact, I'm looking for the album because there is one song on here I almost played for you. Here, can I just play a second of this? This isn't my music for your weekend. This is a different song by the Five Stair Steps, and it's called Our Family Portrait. And I think, again, a lot of these were young kids. It was a family singing. But they decided to put the littlest one on the mic, apparently, in this song, which is called New Dance Craze. It's fun at first, but it doesn't wear well as the song goes on. Like, so far I'm with it. I like hearing the little kid's voice counting it in.
Laid me down a funky, funky bass groove.
So far it feels like a sample, so you kind of like it.
Yeah, right.
Problem is, it never stops.
Scatman's World.
Anyway, that's not my music for your weekend. If it had smoothed out a little bit, it would have been. Yeah. But anyway, what led me on this adventure of the Five Stair Steps was Ooh Child came on, and it just gripped me because every time this song comes on, it grips me. So let's take a listen to this.
Child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Someday, we'll put it together and we'll get it undone.
Song.
Oh man. Yeah, that song might be one of the songs that I like the most that also makes me feel like crying the most.
I know,
but it's not just strictly like Elliott Smith songs just make me want to cry because they're just like 100% sad. Or that David Berman song that you played, that Silver Juice song. There are songs that I'm like, yeah, that's going to make me cry. But then there are songs that I'm like, oh man, this is a great song. I love it. And then there's a couple like this that are both a great song that has a lot of upbeatness to it. And then also makes me feel emotional when I hear it.
It makes me want to take a road trip by myself so I can be out in the middle of nowhere driving fast, crying and singing at the top of my voice.
Well, you know, the day is still early.
Yeah.
So no, don't rule it out.
It's a Friday.
All right. I am going to take us in a almost 180 degree turn from that kind of sonic, sound. That's also redundant. That's like botanical plants. I think those are the same thing. Sonic sounds. Maybe we could call today's show Sonic Sounds and Botanical Plants.
By the way, this is not a show title, but I did want to say you mentioned Icky Stew before, and that is a possible new nickname for our friend the Stewbot. I mean,
he was a running back for the Cincinnati Bengals in the 80s.
Is that a reference to something in particular?
Icky Stew Shuffle.
Real thing?
There was a guy named Icky Woods who was a Bengals running back, and he had this thing called the Icky Shuffle he would do when he would score a touchdown.
That rings a vague bell, probably from you.
All right, so my song is actually from Guided by Voices. It's off of the album Alien Lanes. They're from Dayton, Ohio, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was your did you mess with Guided by Voices much in your kind of indie music 20s?
I did in high school a little bit. I had some friends who were just like so into them, and they were so prolific. I mean, they released albums. You would go to bed, you'd wake up, they'd have a new album out. Repeat the next day, new album out. It's Tom Stoppard, right? Am I messing up his name?
Bob Pollard. Tom Stoppard is the playwright.
Right. I would say I'm like, that's not right. Bob Pollard. And, you know, it was basically him and various people he'd get around him over the years. I do have – sorry, this is your story, but I will say I just have a very fond memory of still being in high school, but my friend Paulie, who was in college and 21 at the time, came to a Guided by Voices show in Cleveland. I can't remember. It must have been in the summer or something like that. And I remember him. I was under 21. He was over 21. And he kept on insisting on buying me beers because he said, all I would have wanted when I was under 21 would have been to be at this Guided by Voices show with somebody buying me beers. But I didn't have that person, so I want to be that person. And it was a small club in Lakewood, Ohio, not far from where I lived at the time. And there was a big I can't remember the name of it. Was it called the Fantasy Theater? But there was a big boat in the middle of the club. Anyway, yes. Yeah, so
wow.
I had my moments.
That sounds like an awesome club.
It was pretty cool. Yeah, a lot of punk bands and stuff played there.
Could you go in the boat?
I don't think so. My memory is actually it was like a big bow of a boat, and up in it might have either been the soundboard or it was like the edge of the bar. I can't remember. Like it might have contained the bar. You'd go up some stairs around the boat. I only have vague memories of it.
Sometimes you contain the bar. Sometimes the bar contains
That's
you.
That's right.
All right. So I was not. I've always been a built to spill head. Maybe because they hail from Idaho, maybe because it's just a little bit more my speed. I could never I think I found out about Bob Pollard kind of through, like, he was in a band called Sugar, I think.
No.
And I never
That's Bob
That's
Mold.
A different guy?
Yeah.
Bob Mold. You know what? And there you go. So part of the problem for me has been I always confuse Bob Mold and Bob Pollard. So that's been
and Tom Stoppard.
And I don't think Palm Boppard is the guy behind.
That's how did you got my Reddit name?
I think I'm not a huge Bob Mold fan, and so but what I did was I was always thinking Bob Mold was the lead singer of Guided by Voices, and anyway, the point is the thing was all jumbled up in my mind. I never gave Guided by Voices a ton of thought, but I recently started listening to this album. Alien Lanes, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners, particularly listeners of a certain age, know all about. It's got like 30 tracks on it or something, and every song's like a minute, or some songs are 29 seconds. Some songs, like the longest one, might be like 2.5 minutes. It has that song Game of Pricks that I love that's been covered by Telekinesis. But anyway, I've been listening to it, and it's wonderful. It's like, so the Addie, when I was in D.C. with Addie some time ago, she was playing me that Tierra Whack album that's every song is like a minute long or something. And to be honest with you, it was, I was medium on it. You know, peace and love to listener Kat, who is like very tight with Tierra Whack. But I liked the album, but it was a little bit, for me, 1 minute long hip hop songs. It was too abrupt. Right when I was getting into the song, it was kind of over. For whatever reason, this album, Alien Lanes, it totally works for me that the songs are super short. So anyway, I just wanted to, and have you been able to dial this up, Andrew?
Yeah, I got this right here, and it's only a minute, so might as well just play the whole thing, right?
That's what I was thinking. This is just a song called, by the way, this is bringing you 1995's music today. It's TBTL, Music for Your Weekend. This is from like 1995 or something, so I know this is not breaking music news. But,
like mine
let's
did.
Listen to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. A good – yeah, yeah. Mine's newer than yours.
And more obscure, certainly. So,
A Good Flying Bird. This is Guided by Voices from Alien Lanes.
Many years we spend on pressure that we knew so swell. Loving times of simple pleasures, only time will tell. Oh, this is not to say we are not the way we used to be.
There you go. 1 minute of Guided by Voices.
I love it. The next track is 18 seconds, like you said. So. I
know. It's good, though. It's also nice because it's kind of like, even if you're not digging a song, it's like the opposite of TBTL. Mm-hmm. It's like, even if you're not enjoying it, it's going to be over soon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not how we do.
Nope.
Even if you're not enjoying it, there's probably 2 more hours of it. All right. Let's do our little listener suggestion for Music for Your Weekend. It's from listener Chad. Chad says, your conversation about fishing and regrets. We were talking on the show a little couple days ago about how as kids we used to be into fishing. And I was saying, I don't want to speak for where you are currently with it, Andrew, but I was saying these days I probably wouldn't go fishing because I'm a little bit too – I have a little too much intrusive empathy for the fish. But anyway – Chad said it reminded me of one of my favorite songs of 2019 so far. Oh, by the way, Andrew, we may be bringing the old hits to the listeners, but Chad is bringing the new hits. So at least one of these three is something.
Okay, good.
That's kind of cool new information. It's from a great band from Australia. It's from a great band from Australia called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. and then Chad writes, whew. Now, let me tell you, Andrew, Addie loves King Gizzard and King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, and she's been telling me about them for a long time, and I've been like, I cannot engage with a band that has this name.
I got to say, this is the first I'm hearing of them, but I got to say, that's kind of my initial reaction too, which is
I am
unfair.
Not currently on enough acid for that to sound like a thing, and I'm like, I know one of these guys has a friggin' top hat on. I just know it. But no, they don't. They're likable guys from Australia. And Chad says, if you are not familiar, do yourself a favor and do a deep dive on this eclectic outfit. You will not be disappointed. In the meantime, check out Fishing for Fishies. That's what made him think of it because we're talking about fishing. Mm-hmm. It's a great song and a great video. It's definitely my pick for Music for Your Weekend. Power out, Chad, in Portland. So that's what we're going to go out with, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. And that will bring us to the end of our broadcast week. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening to TBTL. Again, thank you for being part of this. Do check TBTL.net for all the places we're going to be soon. We're coming. I promise you we're coming somewhere near you because we're going to every single place in America in the next 2 months. So hope to see you out there. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
power out.